Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, is Justin Cuthbert and me, the moneymaker. The rich king with the, remember what I did, the thick king parlay back in the day, and that hit. Last night was the real king parlay, like the MVP king. That's a tough one, but it hit. Last night was...
You got to detail what it was.
Yeah, it was a Shohei and a Judge home run each in a parlay, which actually didn't give me the best odds. Like, you would think that a double home run parlay would give you, you thought, like...
Unibet too smart?
They knew. They can't be giving away free money. But anyway, it hit. I had a lot of people yesterday.
You didn't share that one with the masses, though.
I didn't. I did that last night, like late at night. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is like a very significant game going on. When we knew we were going to talk to John Morosi, and I saw that he was going to be there.
Morosi's in the building.
You know, stuff's going to happen. Like, obviously, the matchup of the two presumptive MVPs, I thought, narrative, they're going to show up. Ding. I actually did one of those similar bets on the weekend when Shohei was here. I did a Vladdy and Shohei home run. I don't know. Obviously wasn't the best weekend for our former MVP caliber player, currently not performing to that level, but I thought that there could be something there. But I would say last night, if you were able to go to Yankees Angels network showcase game, that would probably be high up in sporting events I'd want to see, regardless of the Angels suck. Like, I mean, they just swept the Jays. But to see those two players battle it out, I'm sure John had an incredible evening. We're waiting to get him on the line.
I'm surprised that it seems like a foregone conclusion that Aaron Judge is going to win the MVP.
I have a lot of questions about that.
Like, after I watched Shohei come through and the two-way force and monster that he is, like, how does that even compare? Like, I understand that Aaron Judge is having an amazing season and leading the second best team in the American League. Mm-hmm. It was like, I understand if they were still running away with it. I don't know. You can dive into the numbers a little bit and we'll ask John about it. But like, I just don't even know how you can compare anyone to Shohei. Even if the pitching stats aren't like Cy Young caliber and the home run totals aren't what Aaron Judge,
he just
still
hit
does
50 last night.
He still
too
does double
in this game. 50.
50th home run is a big one in a big spot. Yeah. It just feels like it shouldn't be that wide. Like, it's really wide. It's Aaron. You can't make any money on Aaron Judge live right now to win the MVP.
When you parlay it.
Well,
oh, you mean
I MVP. Actually don't think you can parlay it.
No, sorry. Maybe. I thought you meant home runs. Yeah.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah. What is he like? Minus?
I think he was minus 800 last time I checked.
Minus 800?
Yeah.
I'm looking it up quickly. What's Shohei?
And Shohei was next best at probably like plus 1,200 or something like that. But it was like 50-50 at one point.
Yeah, he's minus 800 to win.
Look at that.
MVP. Well, this guy has a vote this time. That's why he won't really give us a straight answer. Mm. But we're going to try to pull it out of him. John Morosi, MLB Network Insider, joining us bright and early from the West Coast. Good morning, John.
Hey, listen, Justin, good morning. It is a fun. I will do my best to offer whatever insight the rules of the voting permit me to do. But it is I don't know yet where I'm going to go on this. All I know is I'm here in Anaheim. It's like 4 a.m. out here, and that was an amazing show to be able to watch last night. That's pretty special.
Okay, so you can't give us what your vote is, but why don't you potentially give us a compelling argument for each? Is that allowed in the line? Because I think that if you could say, well, this is the reason why Judge should win. Okay, give it to us.
Well, with Judge, you've got an amazing year that obviously is still moving in terms of his home run season. And he may well end up having the Yankees and the American League all-time record for home runs on a team that wins the division. And you saw last night just the presence that he exerts on the game in all moments, where he saw basically one pitch to hit the whole night, and he hit it out of the ballpark. And it was a moment where the Yankee fans in attendance were cheering just at the mere possibility of him being pitched to, and he hits the ball out of the ballpark in a key situation. Like, he's been their best player. He has been the best position player. I think we can argue that without much debate here. He's been the best position player in the American League this year. And I think that you're seeing now, as the Yankees offense struggles a bit, just how valuable he really is. And obviously they're going to win the division. So that's the Judge argument. And then with Ohtani, he's doing things that no one's ever done. That's the full stop declarative statement. There's only one Ohtani, and his value component goes on the field, off the field. He's doing it on a team that's not going to make the playoffs. We know that, but his overall value package, if you will, is totally unique in the game. And I guess the other part I would add on Judge is he's playing center field. He's like the tallest center fielder we've ever seen, because the Yankees need him to do that. So with Judge, it's the home runs. It's playing center field. Team is going to win the division. With Ohtani, it's doing what he does, pitching and hitting in a way that no one's ever done before. So there are two, and I really hope, Ailish, that we, as we have this discussion on all airwaves and every clubhouse and every press box in the sport, that there are two right answers here. And that, I think, is important to make. Whatever I end up voting, I'm going to vote for one player in the top spot and then one player in the second spot who I both believe are deserving, and whichever one wins, I'll stand up and cheer on that day. It's not as though, well, if you're voting for one, you're not voting for the other. No, the other one's going to be number two. And that's still a lot of points that you're putting on your MVP ballot as well.
Problem isn't the right word, but like, it seems like Shohei is just going to change the equation for as long as he's at the top of his game. Like, you have to basically every year it's going to be, can player X overcome the total contributions of Shohei Ohtani?
Right. And that's okay. I'm the quandary that exists, I am totally great with, because if he's going to make us think about this in like three-dimensional chess every year that he does this, I will take that dilemma every year, because he's doing things that we've never seen before. And it's tough. It's tough. I go back and forth, and this is something I've looked at having this vote on many other occasions. Do you ever feel like we're not giving proper credit to someone who's playing on a non-contending team? That's a dilemma. But the other part is, if you look at someone, in the case of Judge, who is the deciding factor in the American League East race, are you obligated to give him extra credit for doing so? Typically, that's how I've looked at things. That's how I voted. But I also realize that, to your point with Ohtani, he's the only one of him ever. So, you know, Babe Ruth wasn't doing this stuff. He wasn't. So, and Ohtani's doing this in an era in which the competition is better than ever. It is more challenging to put up numbers in this era than it was when Babe Ruth was. Just from the standpoint of the quality of pitching, the at least, then again, I look at it from the opposite side, and obviously he's doing something in terms of the consistency of it that is just so unique. So it's really remarkable. And I would say this too: you got two people who really represent the game exceedingly well. Aaron is incredibly classy, and Shohei is incredibly classy. Two great gentlemen who are really I think, mindful of what their platform affords them in the sport. And it's just, it's a great discussion, and it's great for the game. And I just hope that my hope for the sport is that we can have it without seeming like, if you're making a judge argument, that you're making one against Ohtani. Like, there are two right answers. There are absolutely two right answers here. And it's just a matter of which one you put first on your ballot. But the other one is one that the number two choice you're going to feel great about too, because these are just extraordinary players. And I tell you, just to be at a game last night, I'm still kind of to some level basking in the afterglow of having witnessed that, because we saw these guys both hit home runs. Like, it's hard to hit a home run in the major leagues. And they both did it in the same game when the whole crowd was effectively expecting them to do it. Like, it's almost, on a certain level, what you're seeing happen with Albert right now. Wherever, every time Albert Pujols comes to the plate, the crowd in St. Louis is on the edge of its seat and emotional. And here you've got this all-time great in his final month of regular season baseball, and he's delivering as the oldest position player in the National League. It's just, it's unbelievable, really, when you think about it. So it's been a lot of fun. You know, this is where, you know, baseball, I think, has a bit of a challenge just in the structure of the game, that Judge, he batted in the first inning and then he was intentionally walked twice. So he went like 2 hours plus in the game without actually being able to do anything in terms of at the plate. He goes 2 hours, 2+ hours without being able to see a pitch to hit. And then the first pitch to hit, he sees, he gets out of the ballpark, mm-hmm. onto the rock pile. it was unbelievable. I was working the game, but I was a fan like anybody else. I was just looking around like, that just happened. That was incredible. So they're both doing that for the game. And just tonight, like last night, was just pretty special to see.
Maybe one day they'll be able to split the trophy in half and award half to each player. Like, I mean, that would be a win-win.
I would have no, yeah.
It was a dead heat.
I would fully, I think it really is. It's almost like, you know, to borrow from my other favorite sport to talk about, when you get to the end of a Stanley Cup playoff and you've got one guy who leads the team in scoring and has had an amazing run, and then the goalie who's backstopped them the whole way. Like, they're both right answers. There's mm-hmm. no way you could ever say that one is not deserving of it. And I think that's how I feel right now. It's really a flip of the coin, and that there are two guys who are deserving of it. And it's whoever gets it, I'll give them the standing ovation and cheer them for what they've done. And it really just elevated the game, I think, to a special level, because right now, in the States, certainly, you know, football season's starting up, and so there's plenty of people who want to talk about Notre Dame, Ohio State this weekend, which is a great topic too. But when you've got Judge and Ohtani to talk about, and it's sort of a major general sports conversation, it's just empirically great for baseball. And so I'm proud that that's the case right now.
So we got to see Shohei for the first time in Toronto this past weekend. Didn't go too well for the Toronto Blue Jays. Very surprising sweep from the Angels. What do you make of just this up and down nature of the Blue Jays? Is it about elevating their performance to great teams and maybe coming in a bit unprepared or thinking it's a cakewalk against younger team or less experienced, less talented mm-hmm. teams? Where are you seeing this this reasoning behind this?
It's a great question, Alice, and I think that is the essential question of where they're at right now as a team. This is why they're in a battle, because early on in the season, they were just really inconsistent across Charlie's job. I think John has done a really good job with his team, and yet you look since the trade deadline, and part of it might be roster construction. And the way the front office handled the trade deadline, they've got the Jays have been passed by in terms of the performance since the deadline by teams like Tampa and Baltimore, even though Baltimore gave up two of their best pieces there in Mancini and Lopez. I mean, there's really no, if you look at it in a vacuum in terms of the talent on the Jays roster and compare it to Baltimore's, and then Baltimore subtracted two key players, there's no way that Baltimore should be playing better baseball than the Jays this month, but they have. They have, including head-to-head at times. And so I think this is what happens when either your lineup, and we've touched on this before, your lineup is a little bit one-dimensional. It's so right-handed, and they can't get enough different at-bats out there from the left side to kind of be able to win a game. You know, that they lose that game 2-0 to the Angels. Like, that's a game they should win. Obviously, it was against Ohtani. It's hard to score against him, but Manoah pitched great. And you'd like to be able to find a way to scratch one run across here to make it interesting. And I think that's with Ohtani. You know, we've talked about this a number of times during the course of the year, that against a really good right-handed pitcher, which Ohtani is, of course, and they run out all those righties, which is what you're going to see in the playoffs, you're susceptible. You're vulnerable. And that's exactly what happened. This is, we've talked about this and we can see it coming. You know, the Jays are on occasion, and full credit for their comeback yesterday, which was a great, they needed it. That was a huge moment in their season. But they, at some point in time, they're going to just run up against a lot of really good right-handed pitching in the playoffs, just sort of on the level of Ohtani. And how do you respond to it? And that part of it, not having enough quality lefty bats, I mean, that's not John Schneider's fault. That's the front office. That's the team they've given them. It's a really good team, but it's a vulnerable and flawed team against really good competition. So I think that's, to me, part of the conversation there. On the flip side, I think, you know, that from a playing standpoint, they just need, you know, you can't get blown out Friday night, and then you got to keep Sunday's game close. So, and that's on the pitching. That's on the performance of the pitcher. So I look at it all the way around. This team is just a little bit short of the competition. And the Jays should realize that, yeah, Houston's they're a super team, and the Yankees are too. But there's not another team in this league that you really look at and say, well, they should be better than the Jays. There isn't one. The Jays should be a really strong third-best team in the American League with a legitimate chance to upset Houston or the Yankees. And we really haven't seen that on a consistent basis yet. Maybe they can get there, but it's going to have to be from within and with a little more consistency offensively. And you know, last night, who knows? That could have been the turning point the whole season. That's the beauty of baseball, is they'll be back out there tonight. We'll see what happens. But I think that, to me, is where their position should be. Instead, they're in a fight. They are in a fight because Tampa's played great since the deadline. Baltimore's really somewhat improbably been in the conversation. And then you look at Seattle, and they're having a magical year too. So it's going to be a lot of fun. There's some pretty cool storylines ahead right now in the American League, and the Jays, despite their flaws, they were able to come back and win a huge game last night, and they're still right in the middle of the conversation.
Ross Stripling used a word that's common in sports after his start Sunday to assess the Blue Jays, just calling them a streaky team. And streaky's like, I think we've been trying to figure out what streaky really, really means, or what can it mean for a team, since he said it over the last few days, because usually it's kind of seen as a positive, like, hey, you can get on a run, you can do some damage because you're a streaky team. But I wonder, in baseball, over 162 games in the history of what we see from teams who are streaky, what is that like symptomatic of? Is it mean they're incomplete in some ways, that they don't have the ability to keep that standard? Or is it just a product of a team that has a lot of talent but has some holes and can get on runs, get hot, but also get cold, and that might just mean that they're not ready? What is streaky generally symptomatic of in baseball, in your experience?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and I think a couple things. I mean, number one, I'll go back to the offense against quality pitching. Now, this is a good division. It's still baseball's best top-to-bottom division. The Red Sox, they've been last in the AL East, but they're still a really good team. At least they're a good team. They're a tough team to have to deal with. And I think in this division in particular, and with the schedule, you do tend to play a lot of in-division games down the stretch. I think that the Jays' flaw of their offense and their inability to, in my view, consistently do good damage against really good right-handed starters on a day-after-day-after-day basis. That's what happens. But when you can't get your big numbers against the really good pitching, that for me is always, at the trade deadline and when you're going to build a team, the question that I would always ask about a player is, can they do it against good pitching? Like okay, you see a gaudy OPS. Okay, great. And that is great. But who are you doing it against and when? Like that to me is the underlying. I feel like this is an appropriate. I'm always looking for the hockey crossover, but it's an appropriate one here. Like how many? You have to look at like a player's ice time and situation, and how often are they on the power play, and then sort of grade their performance from that. Well, if you're getting all this tremendous ice time and you're getting all this time on the power play, that's where you're getting your goals. I want to know how many of the goals are even strength when you're going up against the other team's best defensive pairing. That tells me that's a player. And I think the baseball comp here is how many times are you doing it against the ace? How many times? And like last night, that was a great rally against the Cubs' A bullpen, and that told me something. But I think to Ross's comment, it's maybe just a lack of being able to do that every single day against good pitching. And again, it's hard to do it against good pitching, by the way. And most teams can't, but the championship teams do. And that's what this team should be able to do, in my view. Or at least if you're looking for an indication of a team that's going to be able to beat Houston in a 5 or 7 game series, you have to do that against Framber Valdez and Christian Javier and Verlander when he's healthy, obviously. That's what you need. And so I think that from my perspective on the offensive side, that's what they lack. And I think, on the pitching side, Berríos is season ERA is above 5. You get him on the right day, he's looks like a Cy Young candidate. But there have been some inconsistent days in there too. And I think it's just a little bit of a lack of consistency. And I think the bullpen overall has been good. I mean, Romano is an all-star, but it maybe isn't quite on the same level of other top contending teams. So I think it's they have just been a little bit short in their consistency. And I think that probably adds up to the overall streakiness that Ross had referenced. But there's still plenty of talent there. And that's why this team is still really fun to watch. Because they're capable last night of a really stirring comeback. And, full credit to Jansen. He's someone that has been, with Kirk being an all-star and the celebration around Alejandro, and deservedly so for what he's done this year, I really admire the veteran player who's kind of getting his spotlight infringed upon by the young guy who is a great team player. And that is what Jansen is. And he's ready for his opportunity. And so last night, huge, in two different parts of the game, he ends up coming up big. So I think that was a really, really nice moment. And Chapman, I think, had a really good showing too. And, Chapman's he's a gamer. I like the way Matt plays. I always have. And I think he's going to – for them to get where they need to go, Chapman is a perfect example of someone that's going to have to be giving you really good at-bats against really good righties. Like that's the way the team is set up. He has to be there. And we know about his defense and it's great, but I think, a game like that last night, that's exactly the version of Chapman that they need. And I'll be curious to see how often he's able to supply that.
So the Blue Jays are going to see a very familiar face on the mound tonight. Marcus Stroman returns. He was a very exciting member of the Blue Jays in his tenure here. How do you view his legacy as a Toronto Blue Jay? And I know sometimes it can be polarizing because he was a guy of great emotion, and he liked to put himself in the spotlight.
Sure. No, I personally have always enjoyed Marcus, and I – a couple of things. Number one, he's always going to be remembered as being part of the team that made baseball front and center across Canada again. And that's pretty special. You know, there's you go from city to city in the job that I have, and you get a chance to kind of see, you know, which players and which teams are sort of special and endure in a particular city. And that sort of 2015-16 era for the Jays, I think it's going to be one of those teams that probably, you know, it's not like, quite like the 92 team or the 93 team, obviously, but that has a very special place in the history of the franchise. And so Marcus is a huge part of that. And even I go back to the year when they played Baltimore in the wild card game, there was the thought about who's going to start that game. You got one game, winner take all game, and it was Marcus. And that, you know, for whatever anybody wanted to say about how emotional he was or how many interviews he gave or didn't give, you know, he was on the mound when it mattered the most, and he won that game. Or the Jays won it while he started it. And that to me is something that tells you the most. Is, you know, he earned John Gibbons' trust in that situation. And that, for me, you know, the manager's decisions tell you a lot about how a team feels about a player. And Marcus got that start. And that is something I'm always going to remember. A big moment guy. When he's the MVP of the WBC the next year. You know, and I've always said this is super important in baseball. We ask and we say, you know, especially in the States, okay, well, who's going to be the face of baseball? Who's going to help us market the game? Who's going to be authentic and be himself? And Marcus has always been that way. And I love that about him. You can't say, you can't pick your spots to say, well, I want my athletes to be authentic and outspoken only when you want them to be. Like, that it doesn't work that way, okay? Like, if you want them to be themselves, you have to take the full 360 and let them be themselves. And Marcus is himself, and he's authentic, and I love that about him. And I think that he is at his best when he is his true self on the mound, off the mound. I really have enjoyed watching his career unfold, and I think it's important to remember all that he went through to get himself back on the mound, the injury and what he did to come back and be available to the Jays late that season in 15. Like, that's amazing. I mean, you can't do that unless you are a superior competitor and a superior athlete who cares about his teammates. And I think you saw his, you know, social media post last night about how he felt about the city. And I love seeing that because he belongs in that conversation. He should be someone who is celebrated by the city. And I hope with all the complexity of watching him pitch at Rogers Center in a huge game tonight, that the city feels that too, because he deserves it. And I'm proud and happy for him to have had a moment last night where he sort of felt that that emotion and the embrace of the city as well.
I'm sure it'll be a pretty big crowd tonight to give him a little bit of love and support, but also hopefully not see him dominate on the mound. John, appreciate you joining us today. Big Canada-USA game on the ice today. We won't get your take on that. We'll wait for hopefully that gold medal game and chat with you then.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this won't be the last one of the tournament, my friend. So we'll have plenty of time to go back and forth about
that's
the next
right.
one. I tell you what, Hillary Nutt looked pretty good.
Yeah, Hillary looked pretty good.
in the last game. She's still amazing. And that's, talk about the all-time greats. Hey, how about this? I'll finish with this one. I'm going to go to New York after this. I don't think I'll be able to see Serena play, but you appreciate the greats when they keep it going year after year. And Serena's doing it, and Hillary's done it on the ice as well. Pretty cool to see.
Well, yeah, last night was incredible with Serena. You get another chance to see her.
Yes.
Hopefully you get to see her live if she keeps putting together some wins. Thanks, John.
I can't wait.
We'll chat with you. Thanks for getting up so early as well.
My pleasure. Have a great day. All the best. Thanks for the conversation, Ailish and Justin.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
John Morosi, MLB Network Insider, joining us from Anaheim. Not a big deal. Big-time grinder.
It's impressive.
Brandon from Tottenham says he's the real Anaheim Angel today.
That he is. Love I also appreciate the hockey comps. Little sheltered
minutes every
there.
Time
that made sense.
That John's on the radio.
That made sense.
There's some
though.
Sort of USA Canada game as well. Like there's World Juniors. There's a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. Matthew Nyes, he knows him very well. Right. I always try to get my little shots at John. But yeah, Canada USA today, women's worlds, just prelims though. So I mean, still be fun, but it's not the big dance. He talked about goats. He talked about some of the greatest. He got to see two of them last night. Something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Yum, yum, yum. The NFL put out their rankings by players yesterday.
Right.
In his 100th season in the NFL, Tom Brady is still viewed as the number one player in the NFL.
Yeah.
Followed by, you want to hear the top 10 quick?
Sure.
Aaron Donald, number two. Aaron Rodgers, number three. Cooper Kupp, number four. Jonathan Taylor, number five. TJ Watt, number six. Davante Adams, number seven. Number eight, Patrick Mahomes. Number nine, Jalen Ramsey. And number 10, Travis Kelce. Yes, I did not mention Josh Allen because he was ranked number 13 by the players. The disrespect.
This is a player's vote?
Yes.
Okay. So that's different. This is NFL player
voted
population?
Voted on by the players. NFL top 100.
I mean, I feel like it's... Like, they got the best tight end on there. They got the best two receivers in football on there. I still think Aaron Rodgers is probably the best player in the NFL. I mean, he's coming off an MVP season.
Number three.
He's not Tom Brady in terms of legacy, but I think he's the best player in football right now. I think the one that sticks out for me...
Your thought doesn't count in this ranking.
No, it doesn't. But I'd have Josh Allen, so you might prefer my thought.
Yeah, I love your thoughts.
I don't think Jalen Ramsey's a top 10 player in the NFL anymore. Not even close. And Patrick Mahomes, number
Patrick
eight?
Patrick Mahomes being number eight is almost as bad as Josh Allen being number 13.
It's pretty surprising. Because, like, generally players, I don't think, put too much thought into it. Obviously, it's, like, the first instinct. That's why you get a lot of... I mean, Sidney Crosby still belongs there. But, like, he'll still be thought of as, like, maybe he's second in the NHL still because it's just who comes to
that's
mind
true.
First.
It's the best player in the NHL.
Legacy.
Vote.
And I think that's why Tom's number one. It's probably why Jalen Ramsey's on there. But I feel like Patrick Mahomes has earned that distinction
I
where
agree.
He'd be higher than eight because he's not only, like, he's surpassed that, like, threshold where everybody knows how dominant he is, but he's still prime, entering prime, amidst his prime. A little surprising that Patrick Mahomes is number eight.
I couldn't agree more. I think maybe give something to prove for Josh Allen this season. Go out there and prove him wrong, Josh.
And who's picking? I know Jonathan Taylor had an amazing season, but who's picking him over Patrick
Mahomes? I don't
know.
It's a scandal.
Like, Jonathan Taylor obviously is a huge, huge name, but he's still, like, he's not, like, a flashy player. And I feel like he would fly under the radar and to collect more votes than Patrick Mahomes, calling shenanigans on this.
It was certainly something to chew on. Speaking of all-star players, Team Canada smoked, was it Peru last night?
Panama.
106-50 to close out their fourth qualifying game for the FIBA World Cup. We're going to talk to Michael Grange. Guys, back in the grind now. A little quiet summer, but things are changing. He's going to give us the rundown on Team Canada and some of the big names that have been consistently performing this summer and looking forward to potentially the Olympics. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar this morning. It's Text Line Tuesday. It's the beginning of pumpkin spice latte season. Canada basketball coming off a smashing win last night, 106-50. Michael Grange, who I haven't heard from in a while. He's back in the grind, Sportsnet NBA columnist and insider. Hey, Grange, how's it going?
It's good, Ailish. How are you?
You have a nice summer?
I have had a good summer. Can't complain.
I love to hear that. Getting some well-deserved rest. But you're still watching a little bit of Canada basketball. Just tell us about this tournament or this, like, little stretch with how Canada's been putting up. I know I just read your article you released about 5 minutes ago There are not many national teams that could lose three NBA guards from one game to the next in international basketball and not miss a beat. What are we seeing with Canada basketball?
I think we're seeing a pretty deep program. And I think the hope was when they named the summer core that they would have, you know, the idea they named 14 players that would sign on to play this summer in qualification for the World Cup, the next summer at the World Cup, and then ideally the following summer at the Olympics. And the hope was that you would have, you know, most of those 14 players named available most of the time. And that's kind of worked out okay. Like, inevitably, contracts kick in and life kicks in, and they've had most of, I think everyone has been in at least one of the two camps this summer. The players that have been available have mostly played, but you've had some injuries and some contracts that have kept some guys out of any of the games this summer. So all of that said, they had a pretty good turnout against Argentina and Victoria on Thursday. And that was really important. Argentina was the seventh-ranked team in the world, had 9 of their 12 guys from the Olympics that they were in a year ago were on the floor. Eight of the 12 guys were on the team that had won a world championship silver medal in 2019. So this is a really good team, a lot of experience. And, you know, Canada played outstanding and got a big win. And the big reason for that win was Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, although Nikhil Alexander-Walker had a good second half and Corey Joseph was really good coming off the bench. All three of those guys didn't travel with the team to Panama for last night's game against Panama in Panama City. And as I kind of point out in the article, normally that would be a big problem. Like, it's not just three NBA guys, but it's three of your backcourt. And, you don't want to be playing international basketball without a high-end backcourt. But, you know, fortunately, this group is deep. Canada's talent pool is very deep. And so Kevin Pangos, who was in the NBA last year, has starred in Europe, is probably Canada's most accomplished player outside of the NBA. He stepped in his first significant minutes for the national team since 2019 at the World Cup and looked amazing. He looked so good, sparked the scoring early, drove the offense, does what he does. He's just a pure point guard. And, it was a team effort. Like, it takes a lot of guys to play well to beat the team by, I think, 66 points was what it was. But Pangos was, showed the kind of depth that they have in this program right now.
So not needed last night, but Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is crucial to the long-term goals that Canada needs to establish or wants to establish here in qualification. I know every situation is, individual, contracts, injuries, so on and so forth, but it feels like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander's approach to Canada basketball is different. What is it about him, and what makes him... What drives him on the international stage and for Canada?
It's a great question. I mean, I think he's really motivated to be a great player. And, I had a chance to talk with him a little bit in Victoria and earlier in the window in July. And it's funny, you don't get to see Shea so much because he's in the Western Conference. So you only got to bump into him a couple of times a year if you're lucky. But he's a really smart, really mature, really big picture thinking person would be kind of my evaluation. Not that I know him all that well. And so when I was talking to him, he uses the word great in reference to his goals as a player. And as he should. I mean, he's right on the cusp of being an all-star. He's, the sky's the limit for him still at age 24. And he's already proven himself to be a pretty elite NBA player. I think as a player, I think that involves him he's talking to someone about really kind of honing in and simplifying his game. He's been studying a lot of Kobe Bryant, just figuring out how to score efficiently and make the game easier. And, he said to me, this is the kind of thing that great players have to do, so I might as well get after it now rather than later. And I think within that context, he didn't say this, but you could kind of infer based on his commitment that he's shown and leadership that he's shown is great players generally do great things internationally. You can't really think of too many that we would all consider as Hall of Fame worthy players or elite professional players who don't kind of do it on the international stage as well, either for Team USA or, you know, we've all seen what everyone's doing this summer in Europe, be it Jokic or Giannis or, you know, Nowitzki back in the day and certainly Luka Doncic. Like, you know, this is a part of the resume. And so, and I think on top of that, it's fun. I think he really loves basketball and he's playing with his cousin, Nikhil Alexander Walker. And I think that there's a real passion to play and Canada basketball is a place for him to place that passion. So he kind of had to wait a little bit. You know, he couldn't play last summer because he was waiting, like RJ Barrett was kind of waiting for his contract extension. So you're kind of paralyzed until, you know, you don't want to do something crazy until you get that deal. But, you know, he's been in with both feet. And he's arguably been, I don't think there's much of an argument. He's been the best player among all the teams, 16 teams in the Americas that are trying to qualify for the World Cup. And I think, you know, when you see a guy who can dominate games, as he's done in the NBA, but certainly as he's shown, for example, against Argentina on Thursday, you know, you can, it's okay to dream big, you know, because those are the kind of difference makers that elevate a team in against the best competition. And Shaq is certainly capable of that. And it only kind of gets you more excited for when Jamal Murray's knee's right and he can get on the floor because he's certainly capable of doing the same thing. And RJ Barrett, I think, has got that in him. And it makes you really excited and optimistic about what this team can do when they do get to the World Cup.
I may be asking you to speculate, and you just kind of touched on it there, but how do you expect Shea's surroundings and help to develop over the next few stages of this qualification process?
Well, the next few stages, we go back into the windows that are in November and February. And first of all, Canada's virtually qualified, right? Like they would have qualified last night had Bahamas beat Argentina, but their next win will get them in. And, you know, they're 8 games into a 12-game process. They're undefeated. They're the only undefeated team. They have the best point differential. So it's really only a formality and seeding that matters over these next 4 games. And they happen to occur during the NBA season. So the NBA and the EuroLeague, top 2 leagues in the world, don't release their players. So that's when we get to see the real depth of the Canadian program. And it's, you know, and we'll see the Phil Scrubs and the Tommy Scrubs you know, Cass Robertson's, you know, these types of players who are really high end and will help Canada get over the hump. So we won't see what this summer core looks like again until they're next summer at the World Cup. But I think you can project and see the bones of like a really, really good team. I think Kelly Olynyk, Dwight Powell, they're veterans. I think they've had great summers. They've been totally committed, played all 4 games, look good doing it. You know, and I think the strength of this team is going to be its backcourt and wing play in the form of Shea, Jamal Murray, RJ Barrett, Lou Dort, you know, it's Corey Joseph. It's a pretty formidable group. And so I think, you know, when you have a guy like Shea and you got to throw Jamal Murray in there as absolute difference makers, guys who can take over games. You know, I think it's fine to kind of look at Canada and go, well, they should medal. They should be competing for medals because I think that's what their talent says.
Michael, so yesterday or late last night, we hear that RJ Barrett has reportedly signed an extension with the Knicks, 4 years, $120 million, keeping with the Canadian conversation. How great is it for the Knicks to lock someone up, especially who has kind of been in a little bit of discussion for trade packages this offseason, and for them to really lock in with someone of that caliber?
Well, I think it's good. And I think the thing with RJ is, and I can speak with a certain amount of confidence, I have known him for a long time and known his family. And you know, the thing that makes RJ, I think, a great signing is, you know, everything that's required for him to reach his ceiling or exceed what you might see his potential as, he's going to commit to doing. He's a very special guy mentally in terms of someone who's been in the spotlight really since he was about 15, who handles it, who is mature and way beyond his years. And then in addition to that, he's kind of honest with himself. Like, I think he's got a great combination of incredible confidence, which he should, and but also that, the kind of confidence that allows him to be honest about what he needs to do to lift his game. Like, he doesn't look at himself as a finished product. And so, you know, you've seen significant gains in his production from rookie to second year to third year. And I'm sure in this fourth year, again, he will again. So I think for the Knicks, you're getting a leader. You're getting a guy you can confidently promote as the face of the franchise. You're getting a great locker room person and a guy I think who's going to be a locked average. So somewhere in that 25-5 range in his sleep, really. I think that's where he's headed as a player. And, you know, I think the fact that you're getting that done at as much as 4 years and $120 million sounds like an extraordinary amount of money. It's actually a bit of a discount. Like, it's not the full 5-year extension. He could have got 5 years, 185. So it kind of gives you a little bit of wiggle room as you go ahead and grow your team. What that means exactly for Donovan Mitchell, I'm not sure, because I don't think it was a lock that RJ Barrett was going to be included in that trade. I think Utah was really looking for as many picks as possible. Not that they wouldn't have been happy to have RJ Barrett. I'm not sure that signing RJ Barrett means they don't go ahead and make a trade for Donovan Mitchell. But, bigger story here is just RJ getting the faith of that team. And I think he gives that team some stability. They've needed it. And, I think there's still a lot of meat on the bone in terms of where he can get to as a player.
Well, Michael, clearly things are looking good for Canada basketball right now, but we will have to catch up soon on more Raptors offseason and projections for this year, because there's been some tiny little tidbits of news that have come out over the last little while, and we'll have to save that for next time.
Sounds good. I'm always, you guys got my number.
Oh yeah. We'll be hitting you up now that you're back, back in the fold. Michael Grange, Sportsnet NBA columnist and insider. Thanks so much. We'll chat with you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. We didn't even get into the Rico Hines and the Raptors, Jalen Harris, Utah, Sfi Mihailuk, Paul George saying that the Raptors are going to come out hot.
Better come out hot.
Yeah.
Expect them to come out hot. A lot of propaganda. Like, you could buy in, right? There's so much content. Like, what's Paul George saying about the Raptors?
That's it. I mean,
at least it's positive.
And they're making headlines right now.
But that's part of the Raptors' way, right? Like, these aren't mandated things, but they're all hanging out in the same gym, putting up shots, working together. And I guess they're impressing one Paul George, which is enough for
me. That's important. Folks, it's time to make your Tuesday. Elton John is coming to Rogers Center on September 7th and 8th as a part of his international farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour. We're giving away tickets all week long. All you have to do is tune in all week and listen for the daily code word and text it to 590-590. Pull out your phones or use Siri if you're driving, because today's code word is Tiny Dancer. Text Tiny Dancer to 590-590 for your chance to win tickets to Elton John's September 8th show at Rogers Center. Tiny Dancer. Another banger.
And if we come into Tiny Dancer in the 8 o'clock hour, I mean, we all win.
I think we might be. Spoiler alert, that's next. Also, we're going to talk to Cubs play-by-play announcer Beth Mowins. Big game tonight. Marcus Stroman back in the six. With Mike Studd, probably, as well. That's next on The Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.